Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jen, who's here to speak with us about the week of celebrating women of Kantalumbo. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Anna. I'm smiling already.
I know, me too. Me too. I think the only place to start is tell us all about it.
Yeah, it really is. So, you know, we've talked a number of times over the last 9 months or so about how we didn't do a formal bridge walk this past year, because it was just a year not to do that for a number of reasons. And so we've been letting life lead, and it's been doing that beautifully. For anyone who has not read the outcome of the 5 Mile Challenge, you can check out the newsletter article, the Africa newsletter, this month's newsletter. It was a wild success, just fabulous, amazing. And so some weeks back, we were talking to Teresa, and the topic of International Women's Day, March 8th, came up. And turns out that in Zambia, it's really quite a celebrated holiday. And she was telling us about some of the really fun things they do in Kantalumbo. And it just sparked the next thing of, oh my goodness, we are at such an extraordinary place in the project right now with young women in particular who are at this really exciting moment in their own education, where we actually have the first woman who graduated from college this last year, has gotten a job. She now has a salary. She'll be able to support her own family, and she'll be paying back her loan, which will then go into a fund to educate the next group of girls. So that said, sorry, there's a plane flying overhead, and you're hearing it in both of our. We'll just pause for a minute. Okay. So that said, it just felt like, oh, everything just clicked into place. This would be such a perfect moment for the next celebration in terms of the work in Kantalumbo. And so we put together this week-long celebration, as you said, Celebrating Women of Kantalumbo. It's all on the website. So if anyone isn't getting our emails, you can go to it by going to the Africa part of the website under Get Involved. There's a tab that says 2021 Bridge Walk. We're just sort of using that as a generic name for all these fabulous ideas that life is coming up with. Mm-hmm. And you'll see the landing page for Celebrating Women of Kantalumbo, which is what we're up to for the next week. And wow. It's really fun.
Wow. And I just love, as you said, how just that unfolding of it, how it started with that conversation with Teresa, just that spark of the celebrating International Women's Day in Zambia, and then, well, we could all get in on this celebration, right?
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's so many components to it. One of them, for anyone who is on our mailing list, and I highly recommend hopping on it for no other reason than to get these stories, but we're sending out through the course of this week 4 stories about particular women and girls in Kantalumbo. One has come out, launching the campaign yesterday, Audria's story. Audria is an amazing woman. I won't give away the details of that story for anyone who hasn't read it yet. Again, it's all linked from that webpage that I just gave. And then there'll be 3 more stories coming out, one tomorrow and so on. So those stories, I never get tired of reading those stories and hearing about the extraordinary stories of transformation in this project. And one of the things I love about it, Anna, that was such a fun idea when it dropped in, was, as you know, from having traveled there, singing is a huge part of everyday life in Zambia and in Kantalumbo in particular. And so you'll just be going around the property, and, I mean, truly, there'll just be a group of 4 or 5 women sitting doing the dishes, singing an absolutely beautiful song. Mm-hmm. I mean, the harmonies, it's so beautiful. So over the many, many times we've traveled there, you know, there are times where we're just, one of those songs is happening, and I'll just sit down and hit record on our handy-dandy little recorder. And so we have all these recordings of beautiful songs of these mostly women singing. And then as I was looking at it, and I sort of, you know, I know the songs a little bit from having heard them so many times, I started to talk to Teresa about the translations, they're all in Bemba, of what they mean, and realized, oh, the themes of these songs so perfectly match with the things we're celebrating in this week. And so each of the stories that comes out has one of these recordings in it, embedded in the story. So you can literally click on the recording and listen to this recording of the women in Kansawoma singing these beautiful songs, and to see how the themes of those songs are woven into these stories. So that's one of my favorite things about the campaign.
Oh, it is so beautiful. And it's like, what I love about it is this, the joy that comes out in the the words, in the writing, you know, about Audrea. And then there's the joy that comes out in the singing, which is like a whole new level. You just got to have their own experience, but it's so beautiful, isn't it?
It really is. Oh, it just takes me right there. Mm-hmm. And I always love that when we have textured things like that, where, you know, occasionally we'll get to hear from Teresa and sometimes the music recordings and occasionally we've had video, it just feels like it brings a whole other dimension to people getting to really experience this thing that we always talk about. It's our project. This project is of the Sangha. And yet, you know, it's far away. Most people will never get to go there. We'll never get to experience it. So any of those things that bring in that extra texture to it just feel like such a gift.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's such a gift that we get to have those recordings and listen to them. And if I'm tracking, Jen, one of the songs is about an overflowing basket, right? Which goes with the workshop theme. Maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the other elements is that this coming Sunday from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, we'll have a workshop that, as you say, is themed around Museke, a big basket of gifts. Mm. And Museke is one of the songs that they sing often, especially on a celebration like this, where they're celebrating International Women's Day, because they're thanking each other for the myriad gifts that are part of their lives and that come from each other, one another. And so we're doing a workshop that's themed around that on Sunday. And one of the great benefits of it is that we're going to get to hear from Teresa during that, a recording from Teresa during that. So again, another sort of dimension of getting to hear directly from the project. And again, the sign up for that is available from that same webpage. And also just today, there was an email that went out that has a link to sign up for that. And it's, I think there's a $10 minimum registration fee, and all of those registration fees, along with any donations people want to make for the workshop, all go directly to this campaign to benefit the women of Kansawoma.
Wow. I mean, talking about a basket overflowing with gifts, right? There's just so much joy all around in this whole week.
And there are two more really amazing components of it. I realize we're up against the clock. One is, there is a person in Sangha who, again, this was one of those pieces that just clicked into place as this was all emerging, who wanted to put forward a $5,000 challenge grant for the project. I get goosebumps every time I say it. Mm-hmm. And so they put this challenge forward, and it's in conjunction with the celebration. And so we're challenged as a Sangha to every dollar we donate will be matched by that $5,000 challenge grant. And so that just somehow gives it that much more, I don't know, fun sort of piece of it as we're going through the week.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. And did you want to mention the other component? We can do it.
Yeah. The last piece of it, which I'm having so much fun with, is we created a sort of an e-flyer, I guess you could say. You could also download it and print it, which there's a link to it again on that main page, and it'll also be linked in some of the emails that come out this week, which is editable. So it starts with saying dear, and then it's got a blank next to it, so you can fill in whoever's name you want to send it to, and it tells a little bit about this celebration that we're doing this week and International Women's Day. And it's, the invitation is to consider a woman in your life who has made a really big impact for you, and to consider sending her this letter and making a donation to this week of celebration in her name. Mm-hmm. And Anna, I will tell you that I have had a very similar experience with this as I did with the 5-mile challenge, which is that when I went to that 5-mile challenge site to see, okay, you know, I'm going to sponsor some of these projects, and then realize, okay, wait, I want to sponsor all of these projects. And then I realized I had the same experience with this letter of all of these women dropping in who have had an extraordinary impact on my life. And so I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to send out the letter to all the women that I want to, and then I'll just make whatever lump sum donation you know, sort of in my mind, breaking it up into little pieces, you know, going to donation in this person's name and this person's name and this person's name, but then I'll make one, you know, lump sum donation that covers all of those. So there's no limit to how many people you can send that message to.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yes. Thank you for the tip. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. In case anyone else was having that same angst as I was.
Yeah.
Which one woman do I choose? You don't have to
Absolutely.
Choose.
Absolutely. Oh, the whole thing is just so outrageously beautiful and joyful and just, you know, so clearly comes from that place of saying yes, right? So there's that spark in the conversation with Teresa, there's the saying yes, and all of these things that flow from that. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah, it really is. And do, you know, we've only scratched the surface of the content of the celebration in terms of the stories and stuff. So I hope people will give themselves the gift of reading those stories and taking it in, because I think each of the four stories that's coming out really exemplifies part of the content of the project, but also kind of the process of it and where we are in the trajectory of the transformation. And so each one really feels like it adds to the whole picture. So really exciting.
Yeah, it really is a stay tuned and jump in.
Yeah. Exactly. Stay tuned and jump in. Good summary. Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you, Jen, for being with us to talk about that. And we'll stay tuned and see you on the workshop on Sunday.
Exactly. Pleasure. Thanks for being with us, Anna, to do the interview.
Thank you, Jen. And we'll turn the show over. Bye-bye. And we'll turn the show over to Michael and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Anna, and thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Ashwini.
Michael, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay. Great.
There we go.
I was just saying how inspiring that story was that just came out yesterday about Audrea.
Yes.
And we were celebrating her generosity. And it's just, it seems like that is the theme of this whole project. It really, really puts us all in touch with the abundance of life, the abundance of our hearts, that basket image that Jen and Anna were talking about. It's just, we're so open when we contemplate this project, and there's just that level of generosity to supporting it. Supporting the beauty that comes out of it, and I've had the privilege of reading all the stories, and every single one of them moves me to tears, and I bet it will move you to tears too, Michael.
yes, it does, and I have not read all of them, and I have read the one that came out for Audrea, and it's extraordinary, as you say, it's extraordinary.
These women don't know what the word limit means.
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes, which is a tremendous role modeling for me.
Yeah, it's
lovely.
How to make it work, not how it doesn't work, because I don't have enough.
Yes, exactly. Anything else you'd like to add about that before I go to announcements here?
No, go for it, Michael.
Okay. Great. As we just heard from Jen and Anna, join Sangha this Sunday, March 7th, for a joyful workshop celebrating the gifts we give and receive in one another's lives. All proceeds from the Museke, a Big Basket of Gifts workshop, will help us meet our $5,000 matching challenge for celebrating women of Cantalamba. And Ashwini, I love that matching challenge. So if I give $10 or $50 or $100, somebody else is going to match that with the same amount. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And True Reflections is a 6-week virtual training in cultivating attention on awareness that will help participants nurture a lifelong friendship with wisdom, love, and compassion. The class starts April 1st and is for those who have taken the introductory recording and listening class.
Yeah, and I think I just found out that we might just have filled it, Michael. So if you really want to get in, write to the registration office, because the we may be able to put you on a waiting list or find a spot for you.
Okay, wonderful. Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our most popular programs for a reason. There is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, with participants required to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter starts April 15th. And is conditioning talking you out of a commitment that you really want to keep? If so, and if you would like some support, sign up for the Keeping Commitments Buddy Program beginning April 15th. Participants will be paired with a buddy for accountability and support during this kind and compassionate training. And for these and all practice offerings, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, press *6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready here.
Excellent.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. This is Tom from San Jose.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Hey. I'm so glad I got unmuted. Because I had the kind of day that where I need a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels good to have this call to get the support that I need.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the first step, right, Tom? Because there's a way in which you the recognition that there is support available and that we can ask for it and get it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, the thing that came to mind as I was needing support, I was like, gosh, I could sure use some support from the practice. And then it's like, well, here comes open air. So I'll put myself in the queue and life will provide. And it certainly did religion. When I heard unmuted.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what are you looking for support around?
Well, you know, it was an ego attack today. Where I had a conversation with my manager at work, and it was a good conversation, you know, about my performance and about, you know, how I can, you know, what the opportunities are for me at my work. And I'm excited about it. My manager is excited about it. And, you know, it was a good conversation. And I looked at it as, you know, these aren't, you know, as I hear about an opportunity, it's not a criticism that I'm not doing the right thing. It is just an opportunity and seeing it in that way.
When you say opportunity, Tom, are you talking about a new set of responsibilities or you're looking at something that was being pointed at that you could do differently?
It's kind of both, but it's more the second one.
Uh-huh.
You know, something that was pointed out as maybe a gap that I can address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we would call in the corporate world constructive criticism.
Yes, that kind of a thing. And so, you know, I listened to a recording of a Sunday group recently where the person who was talking was saying, you know, sometimes we talk, you know, we're coming from our place of practice, and the person we're talking to is coming from a different place, not from a place of practice. So hearing that and going into this interaction really kind of set the stage for me to have an experience where I could be there for whatever happened, no matter what, you know, because the practice gives me the support that I need.
Uh-huh. So the group conversation gave you a framework to go into the call. Like the person that your manager clearly doesn't do this practice, and so he's not going to facilitate a process. He's just going to tell you what he sees. But if you can go in as a facilitator and facilitate the process, then you could be at that centered place where it's that place which Sherry often refers to, right? Someone she trained with at the monastery would basically receive information and say, thank you for that. Let me see what of that is true for me, right?
Yes.
In other words, we stay out of our ego reaction as the, so that we're able to receive any information. And, you know, whatever information is available, we're not close to it, but we can sort of accept it in acceptance rather than in that defensive place that we might get to if we're identified.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So the conversation went well. It ended nicely, and I was doing all those things, and I was really grateful for it. And then that was this morning. And then when I let my guard down later on in the day, the ego avalanche kind of swept into me. And all of a sudden, you know, one thing happened that was a little bit of a, that showed a little bit of a less than optimal, you know, handling of a particular situation on my part. And the avalanche just swept me over. You know, my heart started pounding, you know, and all these things. I started to feel just kind of like I was losing contact with you know, reality or things, you know, and in that ego way, you know, where ego is just really coming on so strong and just saying all these stories about what's going to happen because of this. And I'm just sitting here thinking, well, everything was fine like 5 minutes ago, and now all of a sudden, you know, I think the practice has just kind of ruined me in that way, that it just feels fishy. You know, there's that fishy thing about it where it's like, really? Is that actually what's going on? You know, and enough
well,
of that kind of crack
ego.
In the door.
Right.
Say that again?
It's ruined things for ego, right?
Yes.
Right. So the avalanche arrives. I mean, and you could watch the process, right? The attention shifted from being here for you were probably not aware of how it happened, but it did, and then the voices came in. And you could see that they were the voices, because even if it was intense, which it sounds like it was, there was that experience of I don't believe it, right? This sounds totally bogus. 5 minutes ago, I was perfectly fine, and then all of a sudden, I'm out of a job, out on the street, destitute, and trying to beg for my livelihood, right? It goes from zero to...
Yes.
Oh my God, how awful this is. Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, I just turned to the recorder and made some recordings about what it is that was going on, what I was feeling, what ego was saying, and, you know, some recordings of encouragement, you know, doing a two-handed recording, you know, some recordings from the mentor, from life, you know, that say, you know, there is... life presents these things, and I see them, and then ego is stimulated to do its thing, and you know, I don't need to continue in that ego reaction, that ego avalanche. I don't need to feed into it. I can just let life and me, you know, do our big thing together, and let the ego thing just show me how, you know, how weak it is, and how it wants me to turn away from this. The voices of resistance are so loud because, you know, ego sees this as such a threat. So those kinds of things are the kind of support that I need, emphasizing that side instead.
Yeah, and so it sounds like the practice kicked in, right? So first of all, you recognize that you were headed for an identification. There was sufficient awareness for you to realize, wait a second, the ego's coming after me, and to pick up the recorder and do the things that you know to do to keep the voices at bay, to mentor the human being, to make sure that the center was being maintained, right? That it didn't pull you into the orbit of feeling bad and feeling of believing its story and going with it. So it sounds like that's such a wonderful practice success.
Yes, that's how I'm looking at it as well, that, mm-hmm. You know, what the mentor was saying were things like, you know, this is life reaching out to you. You know, this is life giving you a message in a way that you can understand it and that you can, mm-hmm. you can see that this is the path to ending suffering. It's showing you a new aspect of that path that leads to the end of suffering. And uh-huh. when ego is triggered like this, it can be unpleasant, but it doesn't mean that it's any more real than the things that are really going on with life reaching out to you.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I hear you saying. Is this what you're saying, right, Tom? So ordinarily, when ego escalates, right, and we get identified, it's one experience. There's a way in which ego escalates, and we can redirect the attention. But it sounds like what you were doing is bringing awareness to the identification as a mechanism to see what it is that you were meant to see in this encounter with ego. It's what we've been talking about in the year-long all this while, right? So the resistance yeah. is to completely avoid it or to be tempted to go into it and get identified and feel bad. But to stay there and go, well, clearly something is, there's something for me to see because the suffering is ramping up. So let me stay here and see what the encounter is going to reveal for me. And you may or may not know what it is, but the point is to stay there, right? To listen to the mentor, to be supported in the process of navigating the encounter.
Yes, absolutely. And just trusting that life is providing everything that I need in this moment and that there's nothing outside of this garden that I need to go to in order to end suffering, in order to get what I need, in order to, you know, have the experience I'm supposed to have. It's not outside. It's right here in
right.
this
Support
kind of garden
now.
Of me and life.
That's exactly right. And to be, and what it sounds like is so, it's such a magnificent place in practice, right, Tom, where you don't go, oh, no, I'm identified again. It's, okay, well, there's the identification. Let me see what is there for me to learn in this process. And it's like, it's such a sort of grown-up place, right? There's such mm-hmm. level of maturity. We don't sink into that collapsed awareness. We remain in the expanded awareness, which allows us to be with whatever is in the garden, as you said, right? Not to mm-hmm. draw, not to just sort of go into ego's world, but to stay in the garden and say, okay, well, here I am, and I am completely supported and completely held in this process. I have nothing to be afraid of. Just bring curiosity to the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it also has that aspect of changing from prey to predator, you know, where it's like, mm-hmm. I don't need to wait yeah. for ego to take over. I can take it to ego, and I can use it as the way to see the way forward. You know, it's like in the fear book about, you know, fear is the signal to keep going. Fear is not the signal to go elsewhere.
Yeah, it certainly gives the power back to life, right? That's
yes.
the experience we're having, that I'm not being victimized by the torture of the bully of ego. I'm actually able to see it for what it is. And it sounds like not just see it for what it is, but see through it to see what it is I need to transcend.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That is absolutely
And part of
it.
The
so.
Part of it, the part of the process you might be talking about is just a reflection. If we take it from the content to the process level, right, the process we're training in is, okay, I mean, it's all the successes that you've checked off, right, Tom? I'm in the garden. I'm with the mentor. The suffering's not a problem. It's not something wrong. I haven't done something wrong. This is an opportunity to see something and to stay with perhaps the gift that I'm being given in the encounter is my supreme adequacy to be with anything that life throws my way. It's not going to affect my ability. It doesn't affect my ability to stay in the garden anymore. And that's how I receive that gift. Because in every encounter, I don't get thrown off.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It is just, it's monumental to me, and it's just what I needed, you know, today. It turns a day that, you know, I would say is a terrible day to, you know, a day where I feel like I need support to a day where it's like, I got all the support that I needed, and it was a wonderful day.
Yeah. Well, encounter and transcended, right? Right on.
Yes. Yes.
That's
yes.
The other side.
Very much so.
It's a glorious feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it does give you what we were talking about, right? I mean, it did its worst, and it didn't do anything, right? It didn't have an impact. In fact, I got out of the other side feeling completely held, completely supported, and completely victorious in the encounter, and I saw something too.
So, thank you very much.
Well, celebration recording, right, Tom? It's the only thing that's left to do.
That's right. I will do that immediately. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Go happy.
You too.
Thanks for joining us, Tom. Ashwini, I have about a million favorite quotes or anecdotes from practice. And up there near the top is somebody giving me some feedback or constructive criticism and having enough presence, you know, to see, you know, let me see what of that is true for me.
Yeah.
It's just a genius response.
Yeah. 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 And we know, right? It's not, I'm not consulting the ego to find out what it's true for me. If I'm in that place of being centered, I'm truly open to being able to see what is this from life. Because life's always kind, right? And there's always information, and it might be hard for me to process it in a moment, in the moment of interaction, but I could certainly hold it as a koan for life to reveal what I need to know.
Yes, exactly. And what dropped in as you were sharing that is that without self-hate, I really have a much better chance of learning and seeing how I am and what the impact of that is in the world.
Yeah. And being able to facilitate that, right? You know, to be able to see, okay, well, that say more about this, or I would like to hear your perspective a little bit more about that, or,
you
know, I'm not sure I agree around this, so let's maybe look at it together again, right? Or not say anything at all, because it's not going to go anywhere. All of those are options in this talk.
Yes, lovely. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael and Ashwini, it's Anne calling from the Bay Area.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Anne. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Okay. Well, my heavens, I'm just so happy to be on. I participated in the last two Sunday workshops, and they were fantastic, and I didn't get an opportunity to share. So I just wanted to call and connect, and I was so thrilled with listening to Jen on the good news update and getting that email. I just love the celebration of International Women's Day. I've done that before in the past, and I just love the idea. I just love the idea of being able to you know, I've asked people through the years to donate to the project, and to be able to turn around and say, hey, I'm donating in your honor because I want to celebrate you, that just seems so phenomenal.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so a revolving door of giving and receiving, right?
Yes. And I had this major revelation on the Sunday workshop two Sundays ago. I just wanted to share, and then I wanted to get some reflection on something else I'm struggling with. But we were looking at comparison, and at some point in the call, and I realized that, you know, the assumption is that when I'm comparing myself to something or someone external to myself. And I just had this huge aha moment, which, you know, seems kind of obvious now, is that, you know, what's really going on is I'm comparing myself, or the I and the my, you know, that breaks down, but that there's an ideal in the head that is the standard of comparison. It has absolutely nothing to do with anybody else because it's all projection anyway. And I, that was just like, It blew me away.
Yes, it's the part that's so hard for us to see, that if everything happens in conditioned mind, then the only two things that are being compared are inside conditioned mind, right? So in your case, the standard that we're being compared to is an ego standard. It's just that it gets associated with a someone or somebody out there, and so we think that person is really that.
But right, when I have no clue. I have no clue.
When you have no clue. It's completely a projection. Yeah.
But it was just so helpful and astounding to realize, oh, my Lord, you know, as we always say, it's an inside job. So
it's an inside job, yes.
I wanted to share that because that was just...
It is, and it's so important. I mean, it seems like once we have it, it's so obvious. But to see it is just so phenomenal, because it's the seeing it that is so transformative. Now you can go. Now you're changed forever. I'm not comparing myself to her and thinking I'm less or greater. What's going on is ego's comparing itself to an ego ideal and finding something that is less than. So it has nothing, I mean, all of the resentment or all of what colors my interaction with this person, all of that, you know, just sort of falls away because it's got nothing to do with the other person.
Yeah, which is just amazing. Because what it really has to do with is the ego looking for what's wrong, looking for what's missing, rather than looking for what's right and what's, you know. Anyway, I can't even tell you how huge it was. See that. I just have to share it with Tasha. It was like amazing. Yeah. So thank you. I'm just really enjoying the year-long retreat to date, and I know it's going to be continue to be fantastic. The other thing, I'm kind of in Tom's camp. I'm calling to get support. I'm having this workshop, my own private workshop of job hunting in the pandemic, and it's just been so challenging, and I've really been using the mantra, you know, ask for help. So I signed up for a couple of specific, you know, job hunting things, and I just had a group, you know, where people are job hunting. And I just had this call with somebody where he was one of the facilitators in the program, and I said, you know, I'm kind of struggling with a lack of confidence and clarity. And I was so blown away. He was encouraging me to do nothing. And I just thought, oh, my God, that's so sad. That, you know, from doing, that's where the creativity comes from. And that, and I was just reading this article this morning about this, I have not heard of the movie, but it's about this Korean family that moves to the Midwest someplace. I think it's called Manitar. I can't remember the name of it. It's the name of a vegetable in Korean, Manitar or something. But he was really desperate, and he just decided to close all of his books, and this name came, this author's name came to him, and he didn't even know the author, Willa Cather. And so that led him on this whole exploration, and then he read something that she wrote that just struck him, that inspired him to write about his own history. Anyway, it was just very inspiring in terms of looking at, I just realized I have no idea how to do nothing. Because there's so much of me is like, well, I have to do something. I mean, if I don't do anything, nothing's going to happen. So anyway, sitting with that koan, and wow, it's just such a challenging workshop.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, it's very hard, right, Anne, because it's framed as a matter of life and death. At some level, it is, right? I mean, it is a challenging place because of how it's framed for you, and what the kind of karmic places it triggers, right?
Yeah.
The situation and the circumstances are that. And then you get the sort of life prompt of do nothing. And then that becomes an interesting place for exploration as well. How do I do nothing? but even that question of how do I do nothing is an interesting one, because then you just, okay, well, I don't know that, so I'll find out, right? As opposed to, I don't know that, so I'm not going to do that, right? It's, I mean, our training in practice, in a practice of being, allows us to hold the question as a koan and be in the questioning, not the answer, which I think is the process you refer to about the Korean guy who read someone. It's like I'm waiting for it to drop in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just watch the, I can watch the, I was going to say the panic, but I mean, that's an interpretation, the sensation in my body of like, oh my God, oh, you know, like I have to make something happen. And of course, that whole process of I have to make something happen is keeping whatever needs to move through from moving through, or, you know, words fail me, but.
Yes, precisely, yeah. That the attention is on and on the ego process. That desperation, because I project with the encouragement not to do anything, a very core identity is being challenged. So in that identity is doing everything it can to ramp up the energy of anxiety or ramp up energy for you to identify and move from it, which is the antithesis of not doing anything, right? Because if you look at what does it mean that I have to do something, only comes from within the identity, because if you step out of that, you're very well aware that you are moved to, life acts through you. You don't do anything.
Yeah.
Now, if you ever get a job, it'll be because life got the job, not because of what you did.
Yeah.
And there's that fine razor's edge, which is your experience of, I'm going to show up and practice as if my hair's on fire, but I'm not going to influence the outcome, right? And so part of how the suffering is maintained is mushing together the two things that are not together, that I exist and I do something, and as a consequence of what I do, I get the outcome that I think I need to have.
Right.
That's the only thing that gets let go of. And then you'll just do what, you'll do the thing that you just did, right? Join a group of people who are in the same process, who can support you in that process and can help you in that process, who you sought and who said, don't do anything, right? Those are the life prompts that you're getting, and it's proving the process to you, right?
Oh, my, oh, my. Yeah, you know, it's just such a, that living in the I don't know, you know, is just such a challenging place to live in. And yet I realize that's where all of life happens. I mean, none of us know, right? We just are in an illusion that we do know.
Yes. Well, you're living there all the time.
Yes. Yes.
Right? It's just that the attention is not on the experience of that. It's on the identity. It's some subliminal way it's identified with, I do know, and I am the author of existence.
Yes, yes. Well, and you know, I don't know how this relates at all, but it's coming up, so I'm going to say it. In fact, I was contemplating this as Jen was sharing. I am just so blown away at the quality of work coming out of the Sangha and the precision with which everything is done, and just. I'm just, every time I get something, some communication from our Sangha and all the things that people are doing, I'm just, it's just like blown out of the park. Nothing compares. Nothing compares. And I'm just so grateful to participate in that and drink from that well, as it were. Because, going through this process, I can just see so many things that are not, don't have that depth, you know.
And it sort of mirrors for you the place that you live from, right? If you take the if you look at the projection, there's awareness. People are paying attention. There's such a level of caring behind this process, because we are doing awareness practice, so whatever we do has to be awareness practice, and there's the ability to see that, right? That it's coming through life, and I guess the connected dots is you can trust. So it engenders a trust that life does work superbly.
Wow, you know, that just this doesn't make any sense to me, and that is moving me to tears. The other thing that I was just so struck by when I was reading the communication that came out yesterday about the workshop this Sunday and International Women's Day is just the number of years we've been doing this, and the fact that, you know, Jen made an allusion to this also, that there are now girls, women who are graduating from college who are going to give back those loans, and just the it's like the garden that we've cultivated. You know, each step we've taken, just do what's here in front of us. Do what's here in front of us. And as we do that over and over and over again, the incredible roots that have grown and results that have sprung forth, it just, you know, just so moved me. Mm-hmm. All of that.
Well, and in that way, right, and to be mirrored for the level of the project, we don't know anything. We went in there without knowing anything, and
yeah,
we've taken the steps that have gotten us here. And
yeah,
and that process of transformation it's a joyful one and can be challenging. And so in that story and what moves you about the story, there's another life prompt. It is hard, Anne. It is challenging what you're going through, and
yeah,
you don't know where it's going. But that doesn't mean you're not being taken care of, in the sense
yeah
of the most essential way in which you're taken care of, which is you're okay.
Yeah, and you know what I realized in just admiring the Sangha and what you said, you know, you show up and train as if your hair is on fire, that my part of this is to take each step with as much conscious awareness and presence as I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Because that, if I think we were having this conversation with somebody else, but your goal in life is to end suffering.
Yeah.
The content in that you're working with is the job. But the
yeah
whole process is, you know, how is this process informing me to be happy while I'm doing whatever else I happen to be doing?
Yes, that the only place we can end suffering is here now. It's not when this happens, right? It's yeah, yeah. Oh
yeah,
my gosh, that's helpful. Yeah, so that we can't postpone joy, we can't postpone life. That it's
and
right
here.
We have
here to face what is hard.
Yeah, yes, yes. And yeah, and it doesn't mean, practice doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It means we have the support we need to face whatever we need to face to transcend it. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's so
helpful. To take care of that person who's panicked, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, oh my goodness, I just feel so blessed to be part of this Sangha. It's just such
mm-hmm
an incredible blessing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anne. Take care. Keep us posted.
Okay. Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. That was an extraordinary conversation, Ashwini, and very inspiring. And, just very inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It really is, it's our lot as human beings, right? As conditioned human beings.
Yes. Yes.
To encounter what we need to transcend.
Yes.
It's a difficult plane of existence, let's say that.
Yes. And Ashwini, we're going to break here and hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, I wanted to remind folks that there's a great iPhone app. It's called Practice Recorder. It's great for recording and listening, and it's on sale in the iPhone's App Store.
Thank you, Michael. And I believe we just opened up a quarterly class. The announcements will come back out of soon around that. So registration is open for the first recording and listening training as well.
Wonderful. Great. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
So far, so good.
Okay, great. I was looking at something from the workshop not this past Sunday, but a couple Sundays ago. And Sherry was talking to someone about let me see how I can say this succinctly, but it was about sort of using called it energy management. The caller was talking about what's that?
I can hear you clearly, Vanessa. Go ahead.
He was talking about energy management, and I use running as sort of as a way to take care of this human being. So I run and I feel better from that. And when I heard Sherry talking about this, she was saying that sometimes that can be used as it can be used by ego as a way to control a person to run away from whatever you're feeling. And so I just wanted to hear more about that because I felt sort of confused about it, or like then I could hear ego turning it like, oh, well, you shouldn't need to run. You should just be able to deal with this. And I'm pretty sure that that's not what the guidance was.
Yes. I can reference I remember the conversation well. And I think, right, Vanessa, it is a confusing place because let's reframe it a little bit, right? So I know you might have heard Sherry say that when you're depressed, you move, right? Because what ego is doing to your energy is suppressing it. And so you want to release it for life. So the encouragement when you're identified or something like that is move, run, jump, dance, and get the life force back to yourself, right? Not to yourself, but give life the life force back rather than letting ego dissipate it. So that's another framework to look at this, right? So if every time you feel bad, the only way you can feel okay is by running, then that's a conditional way of conditional well-being, right? So the guidance around that was simply, are you free? Because your well-being is unconditional. And so if your well-being gets tied to being able to do X, Y, and Z, then you want to be looking at how you remove that conditionality. So perhaps that's the place of inquiry. Do you run in order to feel better, or do you run because that's life running? And if you had a situation in which you couldn't run, would you still be all right? Could you be with the situation if that escape wasn't available for you, within quotes, or that handle or that coping behavior, if it is a coping behavior, is available for you? And so that's simply the exploration. It's not that you shouldn't enjoy running or, you know, letting life be active through you in that way. It's just simply an exploration of, is that used to keep you in a conditional relationship with your well-being? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Go ahead.
Well, this is the way I practice with that kind of thing. It's an A/B test. Right? So you just want to say, I mean, I for the next 1 week, when I usually run, I don't run and I see what happens. It doesn't mean I stop running forever, but I just want to see the process that ego uses to control me around it. So let me just play with that, right? So I do my normal runs on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at this time. And I just, you know, I play with, I don't run for 2 days out of the week and see how it goes. Now, is my well-being based on that? Because at some level, what you're attempting to just look at is how is conditioning controlling you? It's not about running or not running. It's simply about noticing when your energy is being managed for you.
Instead of letting the energy be sort of quote unquote managed by life, it's being managed by something else.
Yeah.
I see. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so for example, let's just say I make a commitment to walk 10,000 steps a day, and then my commitment is to walk 10,000 steps a day, and conditioning is going to come in and go, well, you know, you could forget about it today, or you worked out a lot tomorrow, or whatever else, right? So you can see how the commitment gets taken over by conditioning to have the attention on the conversation with it. But that doesn't mean you either do or do not make a commitment of 10,000 steps a day. So you could run, and you could run wholeheartedly, enjoying every single moment of it with as much conscious, compassionate awareness as you could bring to it, and thoroughly enjoy it, and that could be your experiment. That could be your practice. And I bet conditioning will come around and say, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that, or you should only do it every Friday, or if you don't do it between this and this time, that blah, 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 right? It'll either talk you into abandoning what you love, or interfering with it in some way. So that's what you want to really get in touch with. Are you being controlled around this? And if you are, how are you being controlled around it?
Okay, that's really helpful. And yeah, I definitely see ego coming in with, you know, oh, well, this, or it has to be that amount, or, you know, all of that. So to really just to not take it as, okay, well, then you shouldn't run because you're being controlled. Just like, oh, well, let's start playing with this. You know,
that's right.
Maybe I can, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and that's,
like
that's,
one of
that's
the things.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that it often does is I'll say, okay, I'm going to run for X, and then I run a little bit more. you know, I get to the end and it's like, oh, well, you know what? Just go a little bit farther. So I think that would be a really good place to play with it, because that's definitely something that, you know, gets talked about a lot. Like, we sit for 5 minutes, not 6 minutes and not 4 minutes, or however long you choose to sit. Yeah.
Right. And so then, you play it with it another way. So I run 3 days out of the week, and maybe I lift weights for 2 other days, or I do yoga and watch how conditioning goes crazy because you're not running. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a giant experiment. And for example, God forbid, right? But let's just say that something happens. You twist your ankle. And now it's going to do, you get to be in the workshop of how you might see how running is used as a way to make you feel better, within quotes, because you can't be with a twisted ankle and not let off steam by going for a run. So that's the place of freedom we're talking about, right? Whether I run or I don't run, I'm still all right.
Mhm. Yeah.
But conditioning can't make me suffer and say that the only way I'm okay is if you're running every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'll have to listen back, because then I hear like, okay, so I shouldn't have to run, but that's exactly where I started, and I know we've just had
to exactly run. Right. That's right. So it's putting us in that dualistic way that it's all about running, so that we won't see that it's all about letting go ego control, right? Because what it's talking you into is you're going to run. Well, practice tells you not to run, so don't run. But it's not about whether you run or not. It's about whether you're listening to a conversation about running.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it just switches the conversation to, oh, then you shouldn't run. I see. Yeah, okay. I see.
So in
the
way we just put a structure in place that will allow us to reveal the control mechanism by challenging, by mixing it up, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's great. Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Vanessa. Keep us posted, okay? Because I think this is a place where we often get tripped up.
Yeah, okay, I will. Thank you.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. Another fabulous conversation, Ashwini. And in the interest of time, I'm going to go straight to our next caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, Michael. And hi, Ashwini. It's Paula.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, Paula.
Hi. I've just enjoyed this radio show so much from the very beginning to, right to this moment. It's just been fabulous. And there's so many different things running around in my head. But the most dominant thing that's up is making commitments, because that's been part of our practice lately, is, making a commitment. And one of the insights that I saw this time was the question dropped in is who sets up the commitment? Because I was looking at, what do I want to look at? What do I want to commit to? And what would that be? And it was very clear that all the conversation was around, it has to be a measurable goal. It has to be something at the end that you can identify and say you've actually done it. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me so much of my professional practice of, setting goals and all the the efforting and doing that went into setting a goal, and sort of differentiating between a goal and a commitment. And I'm not sure that I know how to express
well,
that.
You know what was, you know what was dropping in when you were saying that, right, Paula? I mean, why do we do commitments in practice, right? Because we want to have a practice. We want to reveal how we're controlled. We want to have something that will bring us to, it's a structure. A commitment is a structure to bring attention to awareness, because we're going to bump up against it if, and it will reveal how we're not here. So if you look at a at commitment practice as a practice, without a practice, we don't know that we're practicing awareness, right? We're not practicing awareness because there's no way for anything to reflect to me when I'm gone. So the difference between the intent, the process between goal setting and a commitment is completely different, because it really doesn't matter what your commitment is. Because what you're attempting to do is to create a structure that will assist you to come here, to see ego doing what it's doing, to know it better, to create encounters, we could say, so you can see the process of suffering and practice going beyond it. Whereas the goal, if I'm understanding what you're, how you look at it in a professional environment, is there's a set of tasks that you do in order to arrive at a particular outcome, which is just so bogus given all the conversations we've had on this show, right? I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't have any control over whether it's going to happen. And yet I'm required to set goals. No wonder it feels like an awful process to participate in, right?
Yes, yes. And I don't think I've ever, I mean, I've not, hadn't, if I've seen it, I've been, you know, seeing just little pieces of it up until recently. And it was just so clear that, you know, I'm dreading this. I'm dreading it. I don't, it's not, I'm not going to have fun. I'm not going to, you know, it's, I won't be successful. And I see how I got talked in to not keeping commitments because it made it such a miserable task.
Process.
And
so
we get really,
it really got taken over.
Absolutely. And so when I set this latest commitment, I just said, I'm choosing something that I'm, you know, something that I am excited about, that I sense I can succeed at. And that was, you know, just to really, my ultimate commitment is to wake up to my own authentic being. And that has, when that dropped in, it was just so much, it's just been a glorious and delightful process to keep coming back to what I've committed to every day, not just every day, but numerous times throughout the day, to see, aha, I chose a phrase from a book that I read probably 25 years ago called I Am That. I read the entire book, and I honestly can say that I put the book down and I didn't have a clue of what I was reading. And yet I couldn't put it down when I read through the entire thing without being able to put it down. And I still have the book. And I have looked at it many times, and it's become incredibly useful to me and a great teacher for me. And I chose that as like a mantra, and it has been just a glorious experience. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to say it's brought me to this place where I listened from the beginning to the end of the show, and I just felt so elevated, and that's happening just so much during all these practices that we have been doing now for a few years, but more and more so, I'm just so clearly aware of, as someone else was saying earlier, you know, how lucky and how grateful I am to be in this particular practice and having the guidance and the support that we have you know, from you, Ashwini, from Sherry, and from all of the monks and all of the Sangha, every single one who calls in and every one single person that participates. I just offer such a deep gassho because I'm so deeply appreciative of the support. So with that said, I just hope you have a beautiful night, and thank you for your assistance and guidance and support.
We say we're lucky people.
We are lucky people, extremely so.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Paula and Ashwini.
Michael, I know we're at the top of the hour. Just one clarification, though, just before we close, is that we do want to make a commitment that is measurable, so that conditioning can't tell us that we didn't keep the commitment. So
yes,
just that we're not encouraging people to make abstract commitments, because then conditioning can tell you didn't do it. So
yes.
Just to remember that while we end this conversation.
Lovely. Thank you. And
thanks, Michael.
Yes, it was a fabulous show. Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, everyone.
Go happy.
Go happy.